This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, a special edition with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. I take us to late May 1940, the cabinet meeting, 10 Downing Street. Churchill is Prime Minister. Chamberlain is Lord President. The War Cabinet meeting, including Lord Halifax, the Foreign Minister. The question at hand is, what is to be done with the British Expeditionary Force retreating towards Dunkirk, the Germans closing in? The French army has been isolated. There is no obvious rescue on the way. Operation Dynamo is conceived, that is the rescue of the British Expeditionary Force, but that is ambitious at this point. No one believes that it may succeed to the level it does. So we're in the cabinet room with Churchill and Halifax. Those are the two principal voices. Halifax, Lord Halifax, is extremely well-liked. He's extremely aristocratic. He has a birth defect of one without a left hand. He's a fox hunter. He's met Hitler in 1937. He met Hitler. He became foreign minister in 1938 after the resignation of Eden, Anthony Eden. Halifax has been in contact with forces on the continent for some time. At this cabinet meeting, with Dunkirk looking extremely defeated, the offer is made by Halifax, let me open negotiations with Mussolini's government as an interlocutor to Hitler and stop the fighting now before we lose the whole army. Churchill's position is, no, but tell me more. And at one point in this conversation, in the War Cabinet, this is a very small cabinet. It consists of Chamberlain, Clement Attlee's there as Lord Privy Seal, Arthur Greenwood is there as Minister without portfolio, Halifax, Chamberlain, and Churchill. At one point, Churchill says, well, if we can get away with giving Italy, Malta, and Gibraltar, and Germany some of our colonies in Africa, then it could be attractive as long as we stand alone, understanding that Germany will dominate the continent. I set this moment up because the choices before the cabinet that day, the next day on the 27th, and the next day on the 28th, it doesn't change. We know the outcome. Churchill wins this contest. Churchill says, no, we fight, because we'll not get terms if we surrender. They'll take more and more. We fight, and if we have to, we'll retreat from this island and go with our fleet to our empire and fight from there. That's Churchill's famous speech on the 28th. But on the 26th, 27th, and 28th, in the War Cabinet meeting, he is nowhere near as confident. Professor, this moment, the Halifax moment, what follows is the mass murder of millions of people on the continent by the Nazi war machine and at some point by the Soviet war machine. Mass murder for years and damages the globe so that we're still living with it today. Now, the Churchill choice was to fight it out. The Halifax choice was to negotiate something less than total war. We're right now entertaining the possibility that Halifax was right. What is your measure? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I think that Halifax, in a way, speaks for the position that we pray against, lead us not into temptation, because the real situation in Europe at the time was that there was no negotiated exit from a war with Hitler, particularly after Hitler's extraordinary triumph in France, utter humiliation of the French in 6 weeks, which is less than the Ukrainian war has been going on. Nevertheless, at a time like this, when you have your army isolated on the beaches of Dunkirk with no clear way to evacuate them, this is a terribly low point. This is when you get of what the possible alternative to fighting on is. Now, of course, they had no way of knowing what the alternative was. They had Halifax's talks with Hitler. They must have had some intelligence. It's not clear to me that any of them had read Mein Kampf or had had, had a really clear grasp of the vast ambitions and the personal derangement of Hitler and what he could lead to. So the very pleasing, not pleasing, but the more acceptable seeming prospect was, let's do some trading. Let's get ourselves, Britain, off the hook. We have our empire, we have our fleet, we have our forces. We can live with that. Germany will dominate Europe. Well, that really isn't our problem because nobody since 1066 has been able to invade Britain. We're an island. We have a lot of strength, and we imagine that we have a lot of resources, the empire. This is nothing more than an intellectual construct, but it's one that appeals even to extraordinarily world-wise people like the ones in the war cabinet.
There were voices in Britain during the years of the 1930s that believed that Hitler was a credible choice for leading Germany out of its mass depression following the First War and maintaining peace. They're called now sympathizers, Nazi sympathizers, fascists. But at the time, Oswald Mosley was the best one of them, best known of them. But there were lords and ladies who entertained Hitler as a dominant power on the continent for some years. So this was not the situation at that cabinet meeting where it was clear that the future was going to be evil dominating the continent. There was a credible argument to make that the people who oppose Hitler are warmongers and that Hitler doesn't want war any more than we do and that he's been forced into this by and then fill in the excuse. So I mention that because Halifax's position at the time and ever since is not seen as defeatism. It's seen as diplomacy first. It's something, Professor, that comes up every time that there's a war between 1940 and today. Diplomacy is seen as the where we're headed. We will eventually get to diplomatic rendering of this contest. And why not do it up front as opposed to afterwards? Churchill, I remind everyone, in 1940, was seen as a failure, a bully and a failure, always talking war, always talking about the air forces, always talking about how we're going to fight it out. Eventually, he makes that speech on May 28th, we'll fight on the beaches, we'll fight in the landing zones. But he never went anywhere in 1940 that people didn't bring up Gallipoli. And are you leading us to another Gallipoli? So this isn't, I just want to emphasize, Professor, as you know, this wasn't in 1940 as clear a decision as we can see it today. Again, the Halifax case is that something less than total war is desirable. Is that a case that we can make for the last 80 years? Does that come up each time?
Well, I think it does come up regularly, and it comes up not in the, as you point out, in the 30s, when you had already had the Manchurian occupation by Japan. You'd already had the Lytton Commission, which found Japan basically guilty. You'd already had the League of Nations on the ropes, unable to act. You'd already had full-scale war in Asia breaking out in 1937. You had already had the Winter War in Finland in 1939. In other words, it doesn't come up even when the signs of what is coming should be unmistakable. It's rather an intellectual construct that's produced by selective reading of the evidence. When Hindenburg appointed Hitler on January 30th of 1933, many Germans believed that although Hitler was perhaps a little bit green, and he, of course, had been involved in the beer hall putsch and so forth, that he would grow in office. He would come to understand the constraining structures of international power and so forth. Hindenburg despised him, but he thought that of the choices available, he would be the best. Furthermore, Hitler had made a very good showing. His party had made very good showing in politics in Germany, although he never won an election. It must be pointed out, people say Hitler was elected. He never was. Meanwhile, in England and elsewhere, you had people who picked through the evidence, stressing things such as Hitler's very progressive economic policies, his first successful use of Keynesian methods and others to stop the hyperinflation that had been, among other things, the death seal for Weimar, his concentration on building houses and so forth for the people of Germany. And it was therefore possible to make a picture, as has been made, of Stalin, of Mao, of Mussolini, when he was first coming to power, by a respected New York Times correspondent, to make a picture of what you want, which is somebody who will deal in a fair and rational way to help us turn away from the abyss of war. The sad thing is that by the time you're at that point, you're also at the abyss.
Right.
And in the cases we've mentioned, the person that you think is going to save you is not.
Yes, we're speaking of 1940 because it is understood after the war that the whole catastrophe that darkens the earth today was avoidable. I mention the memory of a man who was permanent secretary of the Treasury, Sir Warren Fisher. This is 1948. A statement that is comprehensive and at the same time haunting. In 1935, we, Britain, addressed moral platitudes to the Italians about the integrity of Abyssinia without any advantage to the latter and merely driving Italy into Germany's arms. And in 1936, we addressed questionnaire after questionnaire to the Germans about their military reoccupation of Rhineland. When the Spanish Civil War broke out, we deceived ourselves with a non-intervention pact, which nobody but us observed. And in 1938, we partitioned Czechoslovakia. This brief sketch omits many things, including our fatuous performance or non-performance about the Japanese invasion of Manchuria. But the moral for the future is plain. Had the British Empire, the United States, and France squarely faced the facts in unison, the horrors which started up with the attacks in Manchuria, followed by the outrage of Abyssinia, the all-out attack on China, the seizure of Austria and Czechoslovakia, and culminating in the years from September 39, could have been prevented. And therefore, none of these countries can escape a heavy measure of responsibility. That's 1948, mentioning that at least one explanation at the time, 1948, this is the early Cold War, one explanation is that the United States and Great Britain and France deserted the battlefield, left it to men like Hitler. That's one accusation. And when we come back, what are the lessons learned in 1940 that we can use today, given the quandary in Europe? Again, an aggressor, a victim state, and the hesitation of NATO. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.